There are so many positive, good things that come out of so many of the different levels and domains and areas of creativity that I think it's okay to try something new and different, even if you might be terrible at it, and even if it might not have any practical use in your life, because you never know.
Welcome to Talking Creativity, the Crania podcast from Dublin City University. I'm Ciarán Dunn.
I'm Joe Binetti.
And I'm Tim Hannigan. In this series, we talk to academic experts on creativity, creative practitioners, people from the creative industries and the arts, and those working across disciplines and at the boundaries between scholarship and practice.
The aim of these conversations is to dig into creativity, to figure out what it means, and above all, to explore ways to encourage it in any field or discipline.
The Crania Project is based at Dublin City University and funded by the National Forum for the Enhancement of Teaching and Learning in Higher Education.
Welcome to Talking Creativity, the Crania podcast. Today we are here with James C. Kaufman. He is one of the world's leading experts on the study of creativity. James is a professor of educational psychology at the University of Connecticut. He is the author and editor of more than 45 books, which include Creativity 101 and the Cambridge Handbook of Creativity. He's also written more than 300 papers, which include theoretical contributions, such as the 4C model of creativity with Rombeghetto, and empirical work, such as the study that spawned the Sylvia Plath effect. He's a past president of Division 10, of the American Psychological Association, and the chair of the Media Watch Committee of Division 46. James has won many awards, including Mensah's Research Award, the Torrance Award from the National Association for Gifted Children, and the American Psychological Association's Berlin, Arnheim, and Farnsworth Awards. He co-founded two major journals, Psychology of Aesthetics, Creativity and the Arts, and Psychology of Popular Media Culture. He has tested Dr. Sanjay Gupta's creativity on CNN, appeared in the hit Australian show Redesign Your Brain, narrated the comic book documentary Independence, and is set to appear in a 2021 Netflix documentary. He also wrote the book and lyrics to Discovering Magenta, which had its New York City premiere in 2015, and co-authored a book on bad baseball pitchers with his father. Dear James, welcome to the podcast. It's such a pleasure to have you as a guest. Thank you for taking the time to be with us.
It's my pleasure. Thank you for having me.
I am incredibly excited to have this conversation with you today, and there is so much I would like to discuss with you. However, before we jump into the questions, the heart of our conversation, I would like to get to know you a little bit better. You are, as we just said, one of the major experts on the study of creativity. One can hardly approach this notion without reading your theories. Can you tell us something about your journey? Where does your interest for this notion comes from?
Absolutely. I was a creative writing and psychology double major in college, but was gravitating towards creative writing. And it was beginning of my senior year when I kind of realized that I was good, but I wasn't sure I was good enough to make it. And even back then, although I couldn't possibly have articulated it, I had this idea that you had like what now I would call big C creativity and little C creativity. And this realization that, you know, yeah, I was talented, I was good, but would it be that level needed to have a career in it, to support myself? And so kind of at the last minute, I applied haphazardly to psychology PhD programs. And I got very, very lucky. I ended up going to Yale to study with Bob Sternberg. And after 2 years of really not doing very well and not doing stuff on just general cognitive psychology, I thought, well, I love creative writing. I mean, as it was still writing, what if I were to study creativity? And it was the first time, I spent the whole summer after my second year just kind of burrowed in my parents' basement with a stack of books. And it was the first time I really fell in love with, to be honest, anything in psychology. And I'm like, this is what I want to do. This is exciting. And I still wrote for a while. I wrote some plays, a musical, but writing what I would call creative nonfiction, let's say. I mean, not these strict articles, but like Creativity 101. And I'm working on a book on creativity and meaning right now that's still in my own voice. Kind of that fulfills my creative writing needs, and I enjoy it.
That's fascinating, James. Thank you. I would like to start now with our recurring question. It's a question that we ask all our guests, whatever background they come from. And the question is, what single word do you associate with the concept of creativity?
That's a good question that I have not actually been asked before. Because the words that are going through my head are all variants on like new or different or original, but I feel like that's too narrow. The words that are, okay, the single words that are popping into my head are things like balanced or complex, which are not terribly interesting words. Because the two words to me that capture it would be original and then task appropriate or useful, but that's also a little dry. I mean, to crib from my dear friend colleague Vlad, I mean, possibilities is a pretty good word. Wonder is a pretty good word.
If you want to tell us more about what's your actual definition of creativity?
I'm going to give one more try to this single word, which is nuanced, which again is a boring word, but I feel like every time that I think about any issue in creativity, it's always nuanced. It's never, there are so few areas in creativity that are just, oh, that's super straightforward. It's always, well, it's this, but then in some context, it's this, and then it depends on the domain, and there's, it's always so, it's a labyrinth. Labyrinth isn't a labyrinth either. For the definition, I tend to like that straightforward, something original and task appropriate. The downside is that doesn't eliminate a whole lot of things. So, like, what is original and task appropriate eliminate? It eliminates chaos. It eliminates repetition. But part of me is also okay with it because I, in some ways, my predominant view of creativity after all these years is that it all counts. That I'm much more interested in seeing how can we find things that are creative that we may not have thought of as creative than finding ways of eliminating things as being creative. And I think that's one of the common threads, like whether I'm talking about domains or the different C's or the different types of contributions. I mean, I love this idea that creativity can be all these things and creativity can be found almost anywhere and that almost anyone can be creative, at least in some way. I love that inclusivity.
I love that too. And that leads us to a question I thought to ask you. You are the creator of many theories on creativity. Particularly just mentioned, with Professor Rombeghetto, you developed the 4C model of creativity. I'm going to try here to give a little bit of context on this theory. This theory argues that creativity has different degrees and can evolve. So mini-C, which describes the sort of insights that are personally new and meaningful, can turn into little c, which is when a particular result is seen as creative by others as well. With practice, guidance, and effort, pro-C can follow, which is somehow the situation when one is recognized as true creative professional or expert by peers, and eventually the trajectory can culminate in the big C, in the case of achievements so outstanding that the individuals who have produced them are remembered for years after their death. Such theory does seem to democratize creativity in a way. Are you then suggesting that creativity can be enhanced in any individuals?
Certainly, mini C. Would it be 100%? not necessarily. I mean, I think there are some basic requirements, and this is actually stuff that John Baer and I have talked about in the amusement park theory, like a certain very, very, very minimal level of cognitive abilities, tolerant environment, some level of motivation. But for nearly everybody can be creative, at least in that mini C way.
You were suggesting that there are some requirements. Thinking about the university context, do you believe that as educators, we can do something to create an environment and then help students to actually increase their own creative potential?
Absolutely. I teach classes on creativity for undergraduates, but not for any particular major. So I get a very, very wide range of all sorts of majors, everything from first years to fourth years. And one of the things I do is I have them do a big project where there are almost no rules. It's just they should do something creative. And many are very hesitant, sometimes verging on afraid, because you have some who are just, oh, wow, this is great. There are no rules. Fantastic. I can do all these things. But you have a lot of people who've taken a creativity class for the same reason somebody might take an introduction to Mandarin class. You know, you want to learn a little bit and you don't know a lot. And so some people feel they're not creative. And just throughout the class, one of the goals is to talk about stuff like domains, the four C's, and to show how we have all these deeply ingrained ideas about creativity that aren't necessarily true, and that often can limit us and make us feel that we're not super creative or we can't do this or we're not going to be able to do that.
There was something quite interesting you mentioned, the fact that some of the students feel that they are not being creative. Why do you think it's so? What prevents them from feeling that they have the potential at least to be creative?
Awful lot of the folks who don't think they're creative, a lot of times they're in STEM majors like science or engineering, and they have it so deeply ingrained that creativity means the arts, and that creativity is drawing or writing or painting. And yet if I think about the big projects, I mean, because sometimes somebody who's majoring in a science type thing will do something in the arts to try it. But I've had people write computer programs to teach people how to play blackjack. I've had people create original video games that some are quite good. I've had people do little mini science experiments. I remember one student went to almost every bathroom on campus and rated each bathroom on a scale for everything from cleanliness to the strength of the Wi-Fi so you can surf the net while you're doing your business. So all of these ideas and creativity, some of it I think is being given permission to be creative. So many students have a story of that time that they tried to be creative in high school or in fifth grade or in college, and they just got screwed over, that they busted their butt and they did all this work on something and it was creative and they were passionate about it. And because they didn't follow the exact rules, they got a very low grade or they were embarrassed or the teacher said something negative. These things stay with you.
Yes. Thank you for that. There is almost a fear of being creative. And do you think that in order to live creativity at the fullest, one has to be a little bit fearless or at least willing to take risks? Is one of the traits that a creative person should master to some degree?
Definitely willing to take risks, which is a lot easier said than done. I mean, it's very, very easy to say, don't worry about failure. But if you're an undergrad and you're in a science major and you know that you need to graduate with at least a 3.8 GPA in order to have a good shot at getting into graduate school, let's say, I mean, is it worth risking getting a C minus in an elective class in case you misinterpret the professor? I mean, is that a smart risk? It depends how much you value creativity. And it just takes one or two risks to kind of magnificently fail to make a student have very reasonable hesitations that would need some reassurance. That's one reason why I've learned I have to regularly say, yes, there are no rules. This is exactly what I'm looking for. So as long as you do, you know, as long as like in your final presentation, you can show evidence of this and this, mostly things like relating it back to class in some way, there are no wrong answers. And I have them check in regularly, mostly to try to let people feel that freedom to take risks where they're not risking their GPA, because we live in the real world.
What should or could educators do, and what should educators know about creativity so to help students not having this fear of failing?
I mean, number one is to understand just the basics of creativity and come to the conclusion, yes, I want my students to be creative, and knowing what that is. So for example, it's very easy to give lip service to creativity, and it's very easy to buy into these stereotypes to where, oh, is a creative science project, does that mean having a colorful title page? I mean, doesn't mean not having one, but that's not the be all end all. It means, for example, thinking about the impact of evaluation on creativity, and that if you feel like your students are really hesitating or not being willing to commit, have one assignment that's basically graded completion, no completion. And yes, some students will take advantage of that and do minimal work, but you let some other ones, and often the ones who haven't necessarily had a chance to shine, be able to shine because they're not panicked about bombing that assignment. I think saying how much creativity and content knowledge can really be woven together. I still remember this from college. I was taking an English literature class, and great professor who gave us a couple of different options and some of the traditional, you know, compare and contrast this novel and that novel. But then every assignment, he would include one that allowed creativity. So one was add a page to one of the books we read. And yes, it involves, of course, being creative, but it also means you had to understand that writer's style. You had to know the plot and characters well enough that you can just kind of insert almost like a cut scene. Another one he had to do a satire or parody. And again, to do a good satire, you have to understand the basics. You have to have all of that knowledge that, yes, you could be demonstrating in a very traditional, you know, 5-paragraph college essay. I mean, it can mean more work to try to encourage students to be creative. And I mean, multiple choice tests are an awful lot easier to grade. It is almost more work.
What you just described, your memory, is sort of suggesting we should definitely discuss the relationship between creativity and knowledge and creativity and different domains. There is a theory specifically focused on creative domains that you created with Professor John Beyer, if I remember correctly, is the amusement park theoretical model of creativity.
Yes.
Is a beautiful metaphor that serves to describe the steps taken by people to narrow down their creative expressions. Can you tell us more about the way you see creativity be linked with different domains?
The thing that I've always been interested in, so my parents, Alan and Nadine, develop IQ tests, many, many of them. And I always loved that idea of all these little like subtests, these mini tasks that then build up to these larger factors that then pair together to create this score if you need one score. So for, you know, IQ, I mean, if you look at the CHC model, you know, you have fluid intelligence, which is like novel problem solving. You have crystallized, which is acquired knowledge. And you know, you have visual spatial, you have long-term and short-term memory. And it was kind of like this, you can pick a structure and create tasks for it. And I've always been interested in, well, what would those 3, 4, 5, 6 broad areas be for creativity? So, I mean, would it be visual art, verbal art, or writing of some kind, and STEM? Would there be business every day? Like, how would you best try to capture in a relatively small time as much of the scope of human creativity? And I mean, to a degree, it might be a fool's errand, and people who, particularly people who are creative, many just don't like the idea of measuring it. But I also feel like without measurement, things don't get valued. And being able to find the best ways of tapping into several different domains so that everybody has a chance to show off some creative strength. I mean, right now, people who are creative don't get the same leg up as people who are traditionally, quote, smart, you know, or what might be called analytic intelligence. Because if you are traditionally smart and you do well in the SATs and you have a good GPA, that's how you get into the top universities. You get scholarships, etc. If you're super creative, it's kind of a roll of the dice. I mean, maybe you're able to do something that was so specific and noteworthy that as long as you have at least decent GPA and test scores, you would become a strong contender for a good school, but maybe not.
What are the difficulties in putting theories on creativity into practice?
Some of it is supply and demand, in that there is money to be made in standardized tests, in IQ tests. And so there are several test publishers and IQ or achievement tests. There's a market for SATs, GREs, these tests. Again, there are always movements to phase them out, but there's still a pretty good market for it. With creativity, again, it's this catch-22, where in order to have outstanding measurement, you need a lot of demand for it so that there's enough reason for people to want to put resources towards it. And yet, in order to get that kind of demand, you have to show, look, this stuff works. I feel like there are advances being made in measurement, but I think that, I mean, I remember when I worked at Educational Testing Service, the folks who do the GREs and all that stuff. And I remember one of the people there once said, whenever you think about a potential new subtest or test, you have to think, if somebody paid you $1 million, could you increase their score a whole bunch? And that's a pretty big hurdle, because, I mean, yeah, you could, in terms of most creativity measures, even the really good ones, there are, just as there are with the SATs, tricks and little things you can learn and practice. And until you have that kind of a measure that universities would have the same level of faith and consistency, it's hard to sell it. And in a way, I don't blame them. I mean, admissions, that's a high stake thing. And there are lawsuits, there are things like that. You want to feel confident about what you're using. As a creativity researcher, of course, I think creativity is incredibly important, but there's a whole bunch of other possible constructs. I mean, from motivation or resilience or dedication to the community, all sorts of stuff. Each college or institution has to have their own thing that they're interested in.
Thank you. Yes, creativity doesn't stand on its own. You actually mentioned there are other important elements. However, you just said that you do believe the creativity is important. Can you tell us why do you think creativity is important?
That's a great question, and it's one that actually I've been thinking a lot about the last 5+ years. It's comparatively, it's a surprisingly hard question to find answered in the literature. There's so many studies about what increases creativity. There's so many studies about individual differences in creativity, and this is all important stuff. Because if you look at, well, okay, how is creativity related to the important outcomes that we value? Is it related to GPA? I mean, yeah, kind of. Not more than other things. I mean, conscientiousness is more linked to GPA. Is it linked to happiness? I mean, a little. But then you also have other fountains of research about creativity and less positive mental health stuff. The couple of things I've been focusing on that I think are both promising and exciting. I mean, one is creativity's relationship to issues of equity, both in terms of measurement, that if you look at the measures that colleges use for admissions, standardized tests, things like that, there are differences by gender, ethnicity, things like that. Creativity tests just don't show those differences. Everybody has the same potential to be creative. There's also, again, growing stream of work that a lot of the underlying constructs related to creativity, such as being open to experience or being cognitively flexible or having perspective taking, and this is also born out of work I've done with Vlad Klapano, they are also associated with being more tolerant, being more showing less bias or prejudice. And so there's been a lot of exciting work, a lot of it out of Poland and other areas in Europe, showing that some of the same interventions that you might use for creativity can be used for tolerance and vice versa. The other kind of body of research is creativity and meaning making. So finding meaning in life, where one of the leading theories of meaning by Martella and Steger is that you have coherence, and that's being able to understand your life, make sense of your life. You have significance, which is you have a life that's worth living, it brings you joy. And then you have purpose, which is you have goals, you have things you want to do in the future. Creativity can actively help all three of these. A lot of the meaning theorists like Viktor Frankl or Robert J. Lifton from several years ago explicitly include creativity as frequently as ways that people can reach meaning or can reach what's called symbolic immortality. I mean, we're all going to die. That's kind of an upsetting thought. But one of the ways we can feel better about it is this idea that something of ours lives on. And obviously, this can be children, it can be faith, or it can be our creative works, it can be engaging in optimal peak experiences, or what Mihaly Csikszentmihalyi might call flow, which is often done through creativity. The idea of creativity is this pathway to both equity and meaning making. These are very special things that connect us, that give our lives value. And these are things that aren't necessarily as easily reached with other constructs. Because if you're talking about like being conscientious, I mean, that is more associated with getting better grades or usually succeeding at work. But something like finding meaning in life, I mean, creativity stacks up pretty well against most things for that. I think it's exciting.
It is. But now we looked at the bright side of the moon, and I would like to have a look at the dark side. Do you think that there is a dark side of creativity? Can creativity be negative as well?
Absolutely. I mean, I've always seen creativity as a tool. So like if you're talking about a hammer, is a hammer good or bad? I mean, it's a hammer. Use a hammer to build a house for somebody, or you can use a hammer to hit somebody in the head. The hammer depends on the person wielding it. And you can use your creativity to, you know, write a beautiful song that brings people joy. You can use your creativity to figure out a way to maximize resources and help feed the homeless. Or you can use your creativity to figure out how you can embezzle a bunch of money from work, or how you can do a whole bunch of terrible things and not get caught. I mean, denying that creativity can be used for bad things, I mean, of course you can. I mean, most attributes can be used for good or bad. I mean, we think about persistence or resilience as a good thing, and usually it is. But if your dream is to kill somebody and you're incredibly resilient, and you keep trying and persisting and overcoming obstacles to kill somebody, I mean, be a lot better if you gave up. You can absolutely use creativity for terrible things.
Thank you, James, for these insights. We are now approaching the end of our conversation, but we still have some time for few more questions, and I would like to start with a fun one.
Yeah.
If you had a magic wand, what would you change so as to increase creative outcomes?
What would I do with that magic wand? I mean, probably to allow people to see the vast scope of what counts as creative. For people to see all the things they've done in their life that would be considered creative by like researchers like me. And to say, yeah, you see when you did that, that was creative, that counts. And even though you didn't think about it or consider it creative, because to you it's just, oh, well, I was cooking dinner and I decided to do this, or I was trying to entertain my child or any of that stuff. Yes, but that was creative. To take that mystique off of it, I think that would do a wonder of good.
That's beautiful. So creative is not just something useful, but is also something meaningful. In a way, there is not just an economical value to it, but it's more than that.
Yeah, I mean, it can have an economical value. I mean, I'll sometimes get questions about the four C's, where they're kind of asking, you know, why are you emphasizing Big C so much? And what I'll usually say is that Big C was always emphasized. You know, Ron and I didn't invent Big C, dear Lord, you know, not at all. We started with Mini C, and that the idea that you don't have to just be Big C for it to count, and that Little C shouldn't be encompassing everything from a four-year-old to a published author. That to ground it earlier, to ground it at different levels.
Thank you. I would like now to go back a little bit to what you said before. Mm-hmm. You told us that students coming from certain faculties are more likely to have the perception of being less creative. You reasoned that that may be due to the fact that creativity is often related more to the arts. As a result of this, like, is it actually true that it's more difficult to foster creativity in certain domains, or is a misunderstanding of what creativity is, a misconception of what we can do to make things harder in certain domains, when actually it shouldn't be like that?
I think you could be creative in almost any domain. I think that we have these stereotypes of what's needed, what's valued, what counts. I mean, I think it goes both ways, in that there are some domains where creativity may not necessarily be seen as being relevant or needed. And it's important to note that, I mean, there are a lot of occasions when creativity may not be needed. I mean, if I'm assembling a bookshelf and I have all the components in place and all I want is a regular bookshelf, following the instructions can go a long way. I think when people realize how they can be creative in their areas, that it, you know, and so not just it doesn't have to be the arts, but this is what creativity would look like in my major, my domain, my area. And this is how it would be good or helpful. That can go a long way.
Thank you. Just one more question. In your experience, does creativity change in the lifespan? And is there a better time to try to foster it? Or to put it differently, do you think that past a certain time might be too late to foster it?
The short answer is I don't think it's ever too late. I think, again, a lot depends on the level of C. So if your dream is big C, yeah, starting earlier is pretty helpful. But if it's more just about wanting to be creative, wanting to try something new, wanting to just do something, I mean, there's this whole body of literature on creativity in older populations, and kind of the amazing stuff that can happen where a lot of this stuff is in the arts, but a lot of older adults who are active, whether it's singing or crafts or visual arts, I'm trying to think of some other studies, there've been stuff with dance. It's associated with everything from lower rates of depression to staving off dementia, to if people have dementia, having it go slower, to having people feel more connected with other people in their community. Like, I feel like there are different benefits to creativity and that these benefits will be all across the lifespan. So if you are 80 and you've never painted, but you want to paint, are the odds that you will end up becoming the next Picasso smaller? Yeah, they are smaller. Does that mean you shouldn't paint? Of course not. And there are certainly people who start very late at stuff and end up being very, very accomplished. And there's different reasons to engage in creativity. I mean, I've been toying with taking up a new musical instrument, and I'm terrible at music. I know I'm going to not be very good, but I'm not doing it to become pro C or even frankly little C in that. I'm just doing it because it's fun.
Thank you. Thank you very much, James, for sharing your thoughts. We are now definitely approaching the end of our conversation. Time is up. But before we say goodbye, I would really like to ask you about your upcoming works.
Right now I'm working on a book on creativity and meaning, where tentative title, the Creativity Advantage, where I'm trying to kind of just dive deeper into what are the benefits of creativity that are kind of uniquely creative? What are the advantages and benefits from creativity that are a little less applicable to all the other things you could be doing? And have just been trying to just explore a lot of the work and trying to use more anecdotes, more stories just from my own life and attempts as a creative writer. And it's been a lot of fun. I haven't gotten to write that many books in like my own voice. Creativity 101 was one of them. And it's just fun trying to get back into that voice and find the flow, the tone.
James, thank you so much. And on this final news, we have reached the end of today's episode. It has been absolutely a pleasure having you in this conversation. If there is any remark you want to make, this is your time.
It's been a real pleasure. I love talking about creativity. It's one of the few things I haven't gotten bored of yet in life. And it's okay to start small. It's okay to end small, frankly. I think there are so many positive, good things that come out of so many of the different levels and domains and areas of creativity that I think it's okay to try something new and different, even if you might be terrible at it, and even if it might not have any practical use in your life, because you never know.
Thank you again for sharing with us your experiences, and all the very best.
Thank you. Thank you so much for having me on.